Hi, and welcome to the IDEMS podcast. I'm David Stern, one of the founding directors of IDEMS, and it's my pleasure to be here again with Kate Fleming, another director. Hi, Kate.
Hey, David. What are we talking about today?
I wanted to talk about one of the big insights that's been bugging me since I was in Rome at these World Food Programme and FAO meetings. I think for the first time, it really solidified that the distance between what, if you want, two sides who are seen as opposing sides are thinking is actually very small. It's small, but significant. Everybody recognizes the need to localize, to customize, to collaborate. That language is universal. The difference is, in some cases, that only goes down to the national level. And when you talk about sovereignty, you're talking about national sovereignty. And in other cases, it goes down much further to subnational, to communities, you know, this recognition that there needs to go further down. And really, at the heart of the differences I see in people's stances is that question of when we talk about collaboration, when we talk about adaptation, are we only talking about adaptation to a national level of digital infrastructure? Or are we also thinking about subnational, community level adaptation, digital sovereignty, ownership by minority groups, ownership by indigenous populations, which are, of course, minority group by definition, is not national level.
I see this everywhere. I went to an event last night. The theme was, whose AI is it anyway? And the panel, which they were brilliant, they were great. The entire conversation was about geopolitical, national, state level actors and who has what. And you sort of see this jockeying for power at the national level. And it was interesting because the audience obviously had a very different perspective where they had come expecting something that was going to speak much more to citizenship. What is the role of communities? There was a guy who talked about his council and working for the council and the problems they're trying to solve at that level. And so I think part of it is that it is really difficult, and we can talk about that, but it's a lot easier to think about national level policy. It's a lot easier to sell something into the national level, I guess, like really defining something and lobbying for something. But you can see that getting to these much messier, much more chaotic. Also, what does that mean at the state level? Are you giving agency to communities you might not want to give agency to? So you start to see, I think there, I would argue that there's something dangerous if you are some states, a lot of states, in empowering your people to go rogue with technology and develop something that serves their interests. You can imagine in lots of countries, that's not what's wanted. The vision for sovereignty is something that is much more unified and controlled at the national level. So that's getting into more of the political side of it and why countries might have an incentive to think about it a different way. But when we get into the space of social impact, I think we naturally, and I mean, it's what we're most interested in, is community level tech. And what community means can mean all kinds of things. It doesn't just mean a geography. It can mean a group, an affiliation, a cooperative, a farmer federation, whatever that is. There are all kinds of different communities. Or as you have brought up, it could be a company. That is a community of a kind that is unified around doing something. But yeah, I completely see that this right now feels so timely because there are these constant spaces that we are both in where people use terms very cavalierly, like there's just, let's talk about sovereignty. And no one actually starts the meeting by defining, well, what do you mean by sovereignty? Who has sovereignty? And then you go through the whole talk where that's kind of undefined, and it makes for such a unsatisfying, in some way, conversation, because there's just all of this underlying assuming that sometimes even has panelists speaking across each other in ways that are just, they don't feel helpful.
Yeah. Anyway, I like the way you put it as panelists talking on the same panel, on the same topic, saying broadly the same things and meaning very different things.
Exactly.
And this is what I was observing in these cases, that actually in terms of language, there's very little difference. And that's why it's so hard, because in terms of meaning, the chasm is huge. But I believe, and this is what I didn't really twigged to before is that actually those who are only at the national level, as you say, they're not there with ill intent always. There might be some cases with certain interests, but quite often it's just they couldn't conceive anything else. And my favorite group of this was NASA Harvest, which is a really interesting group. I actually need to get back. I've got a communication ongoing now where after that I then got in touch with them. So I need to follow up on this. But they had gone through a number of years where broadly their deep learnings was the fact that they have to collaborate, they have to work with partners, but they've only made the leap down from universal, where we've got satellite data so we can do it all over the world, to we need to work with nation states. If they went that extra step to working with communities, it would change their thinking a lot. And I believe that it would make things harder in certain ways, but it would make them easier in other ways. Actually, the nature of collaboration could change. They could tap into a whole set of partners that at the moment are inaccessible to them. And so it's really interesting that I think for some partners, the national stage level and the fact that they've got to that level from thinking they can build single one size fits all universal solutions is already the big leap. The next leap to take them to actually also working with communities might not be such a big leap because once they do that, certain things become harder and other things become easier.
But I think it becomes a mental framing shift because I think the reason it's perceived as hard, and again, I will reference this panel I went to last night because I heard so many things where I thought, oh, this is exactly it. They were talking about AI regulation and governance. And well, you couldn't take this down to the community level because who would have that expertise? And the assumption that they have is, oh, we just want more AI experts. We just want technologist AI experts. We just need those at the community level. And it's like, no, that's not what you need at the community level. At the community level, you're getting the guy from the council who was saying, actually, we find AI is not useful for us. It's not solving all these problems that we know we need solved because it doesn't have the data, because all of these different reasons, it's not designed for that. And so the idea that you're just looking for a community mini you is not the right mental framework to bring to this problem. At the community level, you are actually looking for somebody who looks very different from you, who is complicating, reframing, problematizing what your assumptions are in ways that initially might feel painful, but actually become really useful in defining what's needed, what policy looks like, all of those different things. But I don't think that that is how most people who currently lead initiatives are thinking about what's needed.
I love that framing that as you shift that level, who you need and what their skills and expertise and roles are change. That's the heart of it. And that changing is actually, it comes back to the fact that actually technologies and digital technologies still need to be deeply human. So we want that diversity of perspectives. You don't want your, for better word, boy wonder to be deciding how things work. You want that expertise to come from the people who are actually living it and interacting with it on a daily basis in certain ways. And so to be able to let go of some of that control while keeping some of the coherence becomes a totally different challenge.
And I think it would frame different problems. Like right now, if you are in the tech sphere, to have conversations about artificial general intelligence feels like this arms race. Yes, we're going to achieve that. The moment you step out of that path and you talk to real people, they're like, what intelligence? What are you building with what data that you have? This would be inconceivable because you don't even have, not only do you not have data from our community, but you don't even have systems designed to even consider how we might collect that data that would expand, change what are ideas of human intelligence. I mean, can we ever capture some data? But I think there's this narrative, and I mean, this is taking us back to our AI series we recorded, but there is this narrative of artificial general intelligence that is driving a lot of AI thinking and fear of being left behind. That is, I think if you really pay attention, to the outside of tech space not very credible.
But it's not that it's not very credible, it's not very relevant.
It's definitely not relevant. Yeah.
Actually, the problems most people will care about are not the problems that artificial general intelligence might solve. Don't get me wrong, I'm not totally against the fact that there are advances that could happen, which could be a leap forward in terms of our current capabilities of what artificial intelligence can do, which people might term artificial general intelligence, and they might have transformational impacts on our world, but they will not solve most of the problems that people are really caring about now that are really relevant to communities. The issues that they're wanting to solve need something totally different, not artificial general intelligence.
In which case, it's not a super intelligence. I'm reminded of that song from the 60s. The lyric is, "A rat done bit my sister Nell, and Whitey's on the moon." It's like a song where it's like, yeah, you have these moonshot ambitions, and I think moonshot is good. But then we've got these really hard on the ground problems that are just, they aren't even being tackled. How is that a super intelligence if it's not addressing these experience problems by the vast majority of people?
Absolutely. It is the vast majority of people all over the world are feeling that their life is getting tougher, things are getting harder, the world is not moving in a direction which is serving them. And that is leading to these problems which are deeply human, where to think that it is artificial general intelligence which will solve them is naive to say the least. But if we could rebalance, if we could actually have effort going into those problems, I'm not saying that there shouldn't be some effort. Pure science. I like the idea that futurist stuff is happening, but maybe a slightly smaller proportion of the world's wealth should be invested in it.
I think that's all we're arguing for. I'm all for those moonshot ambitions. It's just if all the money is going there, whether indirect, I don't think, well, in the case of AI, I think the fact that there are direct harms is actually generating a much quicker, more productive sort of all society conversation.
Yeah, that's true. And
Yeah.
that is where it is a very topical subject right now because the actual harms are being felt and are being seen and observed. But I think the broader statement is simply that a slightly more balanced society is really what the world is asking for right now. And I think part of this does come back to the fact that why is so much wealth invested, and I'm using that language quite carefully, in what is a pipe dream of artificial general intelligence? And I think it is simply that there is and there has been an element of success about the language which is being used, and simply the accumulation of that, which has led to a cycle where more wealth is just pumped in until it becomes the natural thing to do. And so all we're really stating is at some point that cycle needs to be broken, and we need to find other ways for people to be generating wealth is part of it.
And I suppose it is, oh gosh, there's a lot in there. Because one, it's, well, how much wealth is needed and who pays for what, who benefits from what? There are some things in that system that I think are issues. I think there's also the issue of if something, because we're really talking about community versus state level or global level or whatever. I think part of the problem at the community level so often right now, and this is very much a problem that we are trying to get our work and heads and arms around, is it's so small scale. So if something is happening, the idea that you could be building kind of sustainable everything around it, sustainable systems, sustainable fair returns for the people who support that align with what the community can bear, all of that different stuff. Those are quite hard problems to scale to a level where people could see that they could invest in them. I mean, I think most pension funds, their minimum investment is $50 million, pounds, whatever the amount is. There are not many roll-ups of community initiatives that would let them say, yeah, we'd be fine getting 5 or 6% returns on this. We don't need to invest on the assumption of exponential returns. But most community projects would never even come close to that amount. And so you have to design systems that can bring things into coherence where you are doing social things that kind of align impact and giving people fair returns who invested in them, but doing it all at scale. And those are, the infrastructure for that, I think, is so much of what we think about. Those are really hard problems.
Absolutely. I love the fact you brought up the idea of a pension fund. It's such a beautiful example where you have this need, which is very simple, for stability, for security. And in some ways, these social community level initiatives are extremely well placed to do that. But the barriers of entry to actually manage this, it's just impossible to bridge those gaps at the moment. And those are the sort of things where turning that around, turning that into something else is a really exciting prospect. I don't know how to do that, but I do hope there are people thinking about this and maybe we will eventually engage.
I think it's all work that's happening in different places that is thinking about. I mean, we are thinking about it from a technology perspective. How do you scale community technology? And then once you are scaling that, you can start to think about layering on some sort of financial model system. People pay what is bearable by their community for a service that really helps them and is valued. But then it becomes within the realm of possibility to imagine that something like that could exist. But right now, and I think this is what you bump up against when you talk to people with money, where they think, yeah, I'd love to be doing that, but ha, we don't have the time, we don't have the resources, I wouldn't even know where to start. There's certainly not money really being directed to solve those problems.
Well, there are initiatives. There's groups who are trying to do bits, but it is a drop in the ocean. And this is where it's when those drops stop being drops and they start becoming a tidal wave. They start becoming that wave of change.
Yeah, and that is why right now I think a lot of conversations get stuck about sovereignty. They do get stuck at the national level because that is the only place there is scale that people can really wrap their heads around in a way that feels worthwhile to think about.
And there's a recognition that if you don't think about sovereignty, you get into all sorts of really big problems. And there is not yet the recognition that if you only think of national level sovereignty, you also get into a whole load of problems that will happen over time.
Yeah, I think that's a good place to end. Interesting. I feel like, again, once again, we could talk a lot more about this, but this is a very relevant, very timely topic.
Exactly. And it's something where I think we've gone a bit around the houses, but just to come back to this key point, the key point is that the difference between what different people are aiming for is maybe not as great as it seems. It's just the implications of that difference are huge. So if you recognize the need to adapt, to collaborate at the national level, when you haven't yet got to the stage of saying, well, we need to do this for all communities. What about indigenous groups? What about marginalized communities? What about this? What about the other? That's the gap. And the implications of that gap, huge. There's good reasons for the gap, but it's just, we'll see how this plays out over the next few years.
Or decades. Thanks, David.
Thanks.